Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies and nerd culture way too much. Joining me, as always, is Griffin Schiller. Griffin, how you doing?
Not bad. Not bad, man. The thing that I've been thinking about this whole time is just how many of your subscribers truly know who you are and truly know what your taste in film is, because... I guess you were hounded to watch The Devil All the Time last night, and you finally got around to doing it. Not necessarily the film I would have recommended for the Chandler household, but
yes. So if you don't know what he's referring to, there's a new movie that came out on Netflix starring Spider-Man, the new Batman, Pennywise, Winter Soldier, and more. Tons of familiar faces on Netflix. And so in an era where not a lot of people are going to the movies, it's one that apparently a lot of people clicked on. And over the last week, so many people have asked me to review this movie, which struck me as just a little bit odd because the movie's like a very bleak drama. And if you just watch the trailer, it's not what I normally go. It was just curious to me because so many people were asking me about it that I decided that I would go ahead and watch it last night. Did a double feature. Liam Neeson's Run All Night, about this guy's whole life kind of falling apart, trying to save his son, even though he's an awful man. Just people dying left and right, sons being killed, stuff like that. And then I watched The Devil All the Time to lighten things up. And as it turns out, that was not the best movie to lighten up. It's like the most bleak, just depressing film I've ever seen in my entire life. And so, I'll give my full take on it because a lot of people have been asking me about it. The reason I didn't really cover it when it first came out was both because it's not really directly in my wheelhouse of what I normally cover. Some people are asking me in the chat, will these be spoiler reviews? Of course not. We don't spoil things on the podcast unless it's labeled as a spoiler review. So, of course, no spoilers. But I'll talk about it in just a moment. So many people ask me about it. And I can't do as many videos right now because we just started homeschooling. And we're about 2.5 weeks into it. And I'm the primary teacher because I can determine my own schedule. And so when I'm kind of in those situations, basically, I mean, I just kind of have to lean into safer content or things that seem a little bit more lax. I can't experiment as much. Certainly can't review everything that comes out. And so I just wasn't going to review it. I didn't know if I'd be able to watch it at all. And then so many people have been asking me about this movie repeatedly, like, hey, man, I thought you might like this movie. And hey, man, I had someone message me saying that my wife would like it.
And I saw her put that.
You do not know her face. In fact, now that you mention that, I want to watch this movie just because I can watch it with her and I'll watch her reactions to this depressing movie, because this is not a movie that she's going
to like. No. Why, it's okay. Listen, I understand why people wanted you to see it, because Tom Holland was in it.
Robert Pattinson was in it. It's like Netflix is the place where star power still matters.
Yeah.
And it creates these weird vibes, because I didn't get any requests for it before it came out. You know, we'd had a little bit of chat here on the podcast, things like that. Will they get some award consideration? But then nobody was asking me to review it. And then out of the blue, I had all these people like, you should watch this. And it's that Netflix original star power thing where someone hops onto Netflix and the first thing they see is, oh, a new movie with Tom Holland. And they realize the only thing they've ever seen him in is Spider-Man. They're like, wait, Robert Pattinson? Is it? This guy's going to be Batman. And then, wait, is that the Winter Soldier right there? Wait, is that Pennywise? And it just gets people to click on it. And it's just a really interesting dynamic that happens with the nature of Netflix and the way that they market, or should you say don't market, their movies until they really put them right in front of you. And so then these waves of excitement for things kind of come out of the blue. And caught me very much off guard by that one. So, we got a lot of stuff to talk about today. And in fact, I'll get my thoughts on The Devil All the Time in just a few moments, but we got some trailers for these Marvel, for WandaVision, Mandalorian season 2, So people are asking about our take on Tom Hardy as Bond. We actually did a video on that already, but we can give you our quick thoughts on that. Give my spoiler-free thoughts on Enola Holmes. I put a review out, but you know, maybe we could have a quick little chat in here since a different group of people watched this versus my main reviews. And then also it's the audio version. And then just kind of talking about the industry after this year, because we're now 6 months into it that we're seeing this isn't going away. There's consequences. So just kind of a chat in general about what do we think all of this will have on things. If you're listening to the audio version of this, please leave a review, a rating, all that stuff. It helps it to rank a little bit higher. And that's one of the best ways to get discovered with a podcast is just to rank on iTunes. And so much of that comes down to leaving a review, leaving a rating, as well as checking it out each week. So if you're watching the video version of this, you can also check out the audio version and subscribe to it. And I would greatly, greatly appreciate that. With that said,
Here's the thing. They enjoy your ranking videos. So the least that they can do is help you rank.
Yes, rank. That's true. Yes. Searches. Great. Great point. Great point. You know, my channel grew based off rankings. And so I brought joy into your life by ranking things. Help me to rank. That's good. I like that.
There you go.
Use that in the future.
Yeah.
All right. So kicking things off today, wanted to talk about The Devil All the Time, the new Netflix original film that stars Tom Holland, Sebastian Stan, Robert Pattinson, and Bill Skarsgård. And this is a movie that I was aware of, and I thought I was going to try and watch it before the end of the month for my end of, you know, each month I do my rankings. But then after it came out, I was actually just kind of pretty surprised and shocked by the number of requests I've gotten from people to review this movie. And therefore, I just found a way to check it out last night with my wife, which left both of us deeply, deeply depressed. And so this is a tough one for me to review because it's not really my normal thing. I tend to be an escapism kind of guy, or a movie that kind of has a more kind of clear message, or a movie that kind of ties to something. And so tragedies are not the movies I naturally gravitate towards. So I watched it and I could be like, wow, there's a lot of interesting things happening. And I was fascinated by waiting to see what the next horrible thing to happen to these characters was. But it's not really a movie that I can say that I really enjoyed watching. For the most part, I didn't enjoy it, and I didn't feel like I got something out of it. So I could respect a lot of the craft that went into it, certain interesting things as you're watching it, and you start to realize how the different plot lines are coming together. But at the same time, when I'm watching a movie, just thinking to myself, like, I'm just sitting here waiting for the next bad thing to happen to these characters. And it got to a point where it was predictable because you could predict what was going to happen in a scene because you would just think, what's the worst thing that could happen in light of this information? And that's the exact next thing that would happen in the movie. That it's just not the thing that I naturally gravitate towards. And so it's a film that I'm giving my kind of thoughts on because so many people ask me to. It's not one that I necessarily would have thought to put a review out otherwise. Griffin, where did you fall on this one?
I really liked it. I actually loved.
Good cry from time to time? Like, just need to work.
Well, okay. Have you seen the Derek Chianfrance film A Place Beyond the Pines with Ryan
Gosling?
Actually,
haven't. No. Mm-mm.
Okay, so yeah.
That was like right in the window of time where I had newborn babies.
Oh, okay.
I almost saw nothing besides Marvel movies at that point in time.
Right.
Just because I didn't see anything.
Yeah, so this movie kind of reminded me a lot of that film where it's sort of dealing with just like generational trauma and the lessons we pass down to our kids and like how sometimes their upbringing can like shape their view on like, you know, religion and stuff like that. And so like I don't know. I thought there was just like a lot of really interesting sort of like thematic exploration going on that I really just dug, but like, It's also just incredibly depressing and like you said, bleak and just, it's not like for everyone for sure. It's a really tough watch, but it's like incredibly well acted. It is to me like an actor's showcase for sure. Yeah, I don't know. I thought they were hitting on some really interesting, like, topical stuff when it came to, like, small town America and faith and whatnot that I myself could personally relate to. So it's like that part of it was where I was like, okay, this is interesting. And, like, literally, it didn't matter, like, where Tom Holland's character went. Like, literally, the devil was in everything. The devil was all around him. No matter how hard he tried to escape it. And the interesting thing about it was that, like, he, as a, I don't want to say he was an atheist, but he was like more of a less, he was less into religion because of his upbringing than like everyone else around him. He ended up being like the voice of reason. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it was definitely trying to comment on religious fanaticism in these, like, small towns, which is definitely very timely for sure. But I can also see how it can be very off-putting to people who are, like, very where faith is a big part of their lives. And I think this is coming from a very jaded and cynical point of view on that. That being said,
I'll just go ahead real quick. Like, I think that's even part of what, for, like, I saw the trailer and I went, this isn't going to be a good movie for me, because very clearly from the trailer, you get the idea that this is all about religious wackos in the small town. If you're unaware, I was a pastor for 8 years and I didn't come from circles anything like this. And so then anytime there's a movie that a lot of people are going to watch that presents Christians, like all the Christians in this movies are fools, wackos, psychos, or all three. Pastors are presented as the wackiest of crazy. And obviously those people are out there. And I'm in no way denying that. And anyone that is doing any of the stuff these people are doing, fully denounce it. But then when they're all presented that way, like, I see it, like, that's the frustration for me of, like, I don't gravitate towards those stories because I don't resonate with them. They don't reflect my actual experience in church world whatsoever. And so then I have more frustration, and some of it's the baggage that I bring into it. That's kind of the opposite of the cynical view that's here. Right. And someone has these cynical views because they experience things like this. I understand that, but that's not mine. And so then I'm watching a movie that's just really depressing, acted very well, which adds to the depression. And then it's representing people that can be associated with me in the worst possible way. Like, you know, I was never never in a church service where a guy poured spiders all over his face.
Right.
Or his later plan to test his faith. I proposed that one to my wife and I told her I wouldn't be a good husband or a person of faith because I would be unwilling to behave in that manner. And she was okay with that. But that stuff to me, I obviously would have a sensitivity to it. But I'm sorry. What was your final thing you were going to say on this one?
No, but I was going to say, I feel like the reason that whole aspect, because I agree that part could, I can understand, like, that being a little bit of a touchy area for people. I think why it worked for me was because they set it in, like, post World War II America, where that stuff was, like, you know, West Virginia and, like, the backwoods and stuff like that. Like, this was clearly, like, an area where that stuff would sort of happen. And whatnot. The only thing I didn't really like about it was that the structure, it felt like a book, like a literal book, right. Especially with the narration.
It kind of plays like chapters. You follow a character. Window where I was like, oh, I guess Tom Holland isn't really the star of this because it was following all these other characters. And then he comes back to him and he very much is the person.
And that was the thing. Whenever it went away from Tom Holland to Jason Clarke and Riley Keough and Sebastian Stan, I didn't care about what was going on there. That wasn't the interesting thing to me. Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing was that they were trying to use art in order to, like, feel vindicated or whatever in their beliefs, but whatever. But, like, it just wasn't, it felt so detached from the central narrative that I was like, can we just get back to Holland and Robert Pattinson? That's where the interesting part of this is.
And so, it's tough for me because it's a movie where, like, I don't want to say, like, oh, it's a bad movie. I don't want to say people shouldn't check it out because it's if they're, like, excited for it, you should watch it. If, like, you watch the trailer and think that's for me, then you should check it out.
Yeah.
Everything that I'm saying, it's a negative. I watched the trailer and I went, I wouldn't watch this. And that's even some of the language I try to use in my reviews of a lot of, like, if you watch the trailer and you thought, I would like that, that this is the case of a movie where I watched the trailer and went, I don't think I would like that. I don't think my wife would like this. And we didn't. But if you watch the trailer and thought, ooh, dark, grim, man, I think I'll be into that. Then go for it. So I don't even know what letter grade I would give it, because I'm just, it's like one of those movies that just feels so out of my range. But I feel like I can't really go positive on it. So I go like a C+, where it's like, I can acknowledge all the goods, but I did not enjoy the experience. I didn't feel like I got something out of it. So I can't give it a positive review to a movie that kind of falls into that ballpark. A couple things in there to note real quick. Daniel Skinner with the super chat, thanks so much. Point out, Robert Pattinson created his own accent by himself. Delusions, which if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm referring to. But yeah, he didn't use a dialect coach. He just kind of came up with it on his own. There's a couple other super chats that were earlier in this. I'll get back to them in just a little bit, but I want to talk about these trailers real quick. First one on here, just a couple days ago, we got the WandaVision trailer. And so I posted a trailer reaction. Did you have me check that one out, Griffin?
I did. Wait, your trailer reaction or the trailer itself?
Well, I mean, most importantly, did you watch my trailer? No, did you watch?
Yeah, of course I watched it. It was on the second you posted it. No, I did not watch your trailer reaction because I don't watch reaction videos. But I do. I did watch the trailer and I loved it. And I was talking about this yesterday on my show about it felt kind of nice to just get, like, I don't know, some sort of little like inkling of something from the MCU, and especially from WandaVision, where I think it's like a project that people have been really looking forward to because they don't know what to expect. Black Widow, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, we really know what we're going to get. I think Falcon and the Winter Soldier might be a little it might hit on some like politics of the time or whatnot, or the state of our country right now. It'll be really like on the pulse of what's going on. But like, other than that, I can basically, it's going to be like an espionage sort of action thing. WandaVision, dude, I have no idea what's going to happen. And I think the trailer only doubles down on that. And I think it's weird the way this whole thing is sort of worked out, where it's like the project people are most interested in is the project we're going to end up getting first. And so we'll have this as our first main like thing for Phase 4 that really sets the stage. And I almost think they should have done this to begin with, because WandaVision is going to be painting this post-Endgame world in a very insular experience. We're going to get it from just like, you know, these characters going through what they're going through in Wanda's alternate reality or whatever. And we'll like get a taste of what the larger world is. But then once that show ends and then we get Black Widow and Falcon and the Winter Soldier, they're going to paint the broad strokes of the state of the world of what's going on right now, how the Sokovia Accords have affected them and stuff like that. And so I think it's like actually a smart idea to start small and then expand your universe that way. But as for the trailer itself, dude, it was wild. It was just bold, wacky, everything I was hoping that we were going to get from it. And it's the Marvel property and project I'm definitely most interested in seeing.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it. Yeah. it's because like as I was watching it, and I think the first thing I said in my trailer reaction, which you didn't watch, was this is safe to say this will be the weirdest and least obviously accessible.
Right.
Marvel project we've gotten thus far, that they've made such things that are just so easy to package. They fit a template, they big action one-liners, and you know, you kind of know, like per your criticism, like you know what it is, like they're, you know what you're getting. And then you watch this, and this is the kickoff, as it turns out, for Phase 4. Wacky year gets turned upside down. This is the kickoff. And it's, you know, Wanda going into her dream realities that are sitcoms of her with Vision.
Yeah,
while there's a witch letting Vision know that he's dead. And then there's spy stuff going on elsewhere. It's like, I don't even know what those words, I don't even know what that means or how that fits. So it's so fascinating to me that this is the way it's playing out. This isn't the one that I'm most excited for. I'm a little bit more I like the tropes and all that stuff. So because it's different, I don't know what it's getting. It's such an experiment that it's characters that we know, it's characters that we've seen,
sure.
But the actual, what the experience of it, there's not a lot of connective tissue there. It's like it's a totally different thing.
Yeah.
Based off what they're showing us, because I mean, when we're in sitcoms, that is so weird. It's so strange that it's tough for me to grasp what the actual experience of an episode will be, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. But I can't say that I'm the person that's most immediately excited for it. And so I would kind of go the opposite direction. If you're trying to kick off these Disney Plus shows and get people to that excitement momentum to get people to start watching them, I would think the more accessible one would be the one that you want, that the nice, safe, hey, it's Chili's. It's not, we're not going fancy. We're not going to your buddy's restaurant on the other end of town that nobody's heard of. We are going into a safe branded restaurant, familiar characters, familiar genre, but we know it'll be slick and good. And so you get people to trust the quality, as opposed to if you go into it and it's too trippy and weird for people that they're going like, I watched Spider-Man Far From Home. I watched Endgame, and now I'm watching 1950s sitcom Marvel show. That's where my mind naturally goes.
Well, and I think that's what Kevin Feige was thinking as well, because clearly Black Widow and Falcon and Winter Soldier were supposed to come first.
Kevin Feige actually called me up last night.
Yeah, I understand why they originally had the plans the way they were. I just think that, like, from more of a like creative standpoint, it just interests me more, the rearranging of the structure. But I don't know, man. Like, I thought this question, like, or the trailer, like, while it was like a minute and a half long, there was so much just that I was like dissecting and whatnot, and like what's going on with Scarlet Witch. I think obviously it's going to we're going to get some stuff pertaining to like her kids and how they came to be. What's her name? Catherine Hahn's character. It's rumored that she's going to be playing Agatha Harkness, who is a witch who trains Wanda in her ability and basically teaches her how to create her own kids without Vision. And then those kids end up being birthed with the spirit of Mephisto inside of them. And for those of you who don't know, Mephisto is a major, major villain in the comics for Doctor Strange, Ghost Rider, Wanda. And so it's like, I have a feeling that this series, when we get to the end, is going to incorporate Mephisto in it in some capacity. And so then when we get to Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, and Doctor Strange is going through all the, you know, seven circles of hell or whatever, and these wacky alternate realities, it's ultimately going to be to fight Mephisto. So I think that's sort of what they're setting up with this show, and that's how it'll sort of connect to Multiverse of Madness. And that alone gets me really excited.
Daniel Skinner brought up, he actually messaged this to me on Instagram right before we started, but WandaVision will follow the House of M comic where witches will mess with Wanda's head. A lot of W's in that sentence.
Right.
The result will have Wanda going crazy and sword as well. So you touched on a couple of those things in there.
Yeah.
But, kind of giving some of that background of exactly kind of what's going on.
Well, the other thing is the interesting thing about House of M, and granted, I am not an expert on this by any means. I've just talked to people who are much smarter than me, and then I just relay the information. So the House of M line basically deals with the fact that her kids die, and I believe she goes on like a killing spree and the Avengers have to like contain her, which I think if you get a sense of what's going on here, it feels like Wanda is grieving because she's the only one who can't go back to normal, to a sense of normalcy after this whole, you know, Endgame thing. Like Vision didn't come back. And so she's probably, because they were so connected when they were in a relationship, she was probably able to just manifest him inside of her mind and then create this little self-contained reality. And Sword, who is the intergalactic shield, is probably keeping an eye on her or trying to infiltrate her. or something, or maybe they've got her contained to this one area. I have no idea. And so there'll definitely be like a little bit of a entanglement there with Monica Rambeau from what is it?
Captain Marvel.
Yeah, Captain Marvel. Thank you. So I think she's going to be a S.W.O.R.D. agent trying to infiltrate what's going on with Wanda. And that'll be sort of how they integrate that right there. But yeah, I don't think it's going to be a direct translation of the House of M. I think there will be elements of it, but I actually got a lot of Tom King's Vision run, which is when Vision tries to settle down and have a suburban life. And so the stuff with the sitcom elements and just trying to, you know, block out the messiness of the world and stop being a hero and just like living for yourself. That is all directly inspired by the Vision comic, which is by far one of the best comic runs I've ever read in my entire life. It is so, so good. So I highly recommend, if you have not read those, checking that out.
The Vision, or what's it called?
Yes, it's just called Vision, or The Vision, and it's by Tom King.
Okay. Our buddy Colin Williams had a super chat. What's up, fellas? No question. Just supporting the channel. Sean, throw some money to Griffin since I didn't click his affiliate link.
Yeah, that jerk bought, I recommended him a microphone and he bought the microphone, but he didn't use the affiliate link to said microphone that is in the description of every single one of my videos. That's so there's that.
All right. Different direction. Old in Bass School had a super chat. I'm very sorry if I mispronounced your name. Ask Tom Hardy as next James Bond thoughts. So we actually did a full 20-minute video over on your channel several days ago. We actually tackled this in full and kind of gave our full thoughts on this. And then I clipped out my main little section, put that over on my Facebook and Instagram pages. And so if you always want to like check my community tabs, and I try and send people all the over the place where I cover different things. But so my quick take on it is that I don't buy the rumors on a number of different reasons. It doesn't fit the pattern of how they've cast before. And since he's 43, it just doesn't, like, doesn't seem like they normally these days with franchises would want to go with someone at 43 to kick things off. But like if you look at who they've cast every other time, it's not an established A-lister with multiple big franchises associated with them. So I just wouldn't think he'd be in the running. And then, you know, at 43, like they want him to be Bond for 15 years. And he's 43 right now. It just seems very unlikely. And I agree with their casting model. I want them to cast someone that I don't know. Or when they say this person, I go, who? And then I go, oh, he was this side character in this movie. Oh, he was really good in that. Yeah, he was. Okay. But I want them to get that person, the person that's really good that the general public doesn't really know quite yet. But every casting director knows, not someone on this list of 20 A-listers that we all know, that we all already associate with another character. I don't want Loki. I don't want Spider-Man. I don't want Eddie Brock playing Bond. How about you?
Yeah, I guess it's a matter of, do I buy it and do I want it? Do I buy it? Absolutely not. I mean, granted, I'll give credit to the scooper. He seemed very genuine and in his write up. I mean, he was like, hey, listen, I don't normally do this. I have this piece of information. Here it is. And I understand the feeling of just throwing something out there and having people say, oh, that's a lie. Because, I mean, I did it with Batman Beyond and the Keaton and Burton stuff. And I got the same response. So, like, I understand that.
Right.
The only reason I'm not inclined to believe this is because Tom Hardy is one so incredibly high profile. It is not, there's no precedent for this when the people at Eon have cast James Bond.
Right.
Two, I don't know. I can't, like, he's 43. I understand everyone's like, oh, Roger Moore was 45 when he was cast as James Bond. Yeah, but Roger Moore was pumping out films every single year during his like tenure, every other year or something like that. And the way movies are made these days, that's just not going to happen.
He already has franchises.
Exactly.
In demand that just, it's not, his career is not the same. And so his stardom is a liability for that reason.
Oh, absolutely.
It's very difficult. Like if you have someone that already has franchises, those are competing for your ability to put out your Bond movie when you want. You don't.
Right. Yeah, no, you definitely don't. Now, I can understand maybe people saying, well, okay, what if they just did like a trilogy of films with like Christopher Nolan directing? That would be the only like scenario where I could go, okay, casting Tom Hardy makes sense. If it's a three film sort of deal and then he's right. out, sure. But I don't know. Eon always wants to cast actors for the long haul. They want to get the most out of them. And like you were saying, Sean, they want to be the entity that births the new movie star or whatever. Mm-hmm. Daniel Craig wouldn't be Daniel Craig that we know today if he hadn't signed on to be yeah. James Bond with Casino Royale. And so right. just again, going back to Tom Hardy's baggage and all that stuff, it just doesn't, it doesn't work for
yeah.
me.
And like in both is what we said in the other video. If it happens, I think he could do it.
He's he's a good actor. Yeah.
And you know, I'm not going to be mad. I'll be kind of confused. I'd be surprised. And if they announce it and like, if they, I think that's the thing is if they announce it and they say, hey, we're trying to do something different, an older Bond that is kind of, okay, sure. But you're breaking from the pattern. That's the whole point, is that it would be a break from the pattern. And when they do that, then I'll change my algorithm in my brain for how I process these rumors. But at the moment, it doesn't feel quite right to me. All right, moving right along to our next trailer that we got, and we'll kind of dive into, we've got some super chats coming in talking about future movies and stuff, talking about movie theaters, and we'll get into all of that. But we also got our trailer for The Mandalorian Season 2. And once again, I put out a trailer reaction. Griffin, what did you think of my trailer reaction?
It was great. You reacted well. You seemed to enjoy
thank you,
it.
Thank you. My son also did a trailer reaction. If you didn't watch that one, I'm offended.
Of course I watched that one. I watched both of them at the same time.
He got super giddy at the end of the trailer when Baby Yoda made jokes. It was precious. What Baby Yoda did and what my son did in response to it. What did you think of the trailer?
I didn't do anything for me. it was just a bunch of like pretty shots with like nothing substantial in it. Then again, this is The Mandalorian. They really don't have to do much to really get us on board for a second season. Also, we're deprived for content right now, so they really don't have to do much in terms of marketing. Excuse me. I don't know. It was just if this was a normal year and there was a bunch of stuff coming out, this would not work for me as a trailer. I was like, okay, cool. We got Baby Yoda doing this thing. We've got some weird voiceover going on here that's not really saying much. It's just a bunch of glamour shots and cinematography looks great, but I don't. And the sea stuff, the stuff with him on the boat, that looks interesting and different. But like outside of that, I was just sort of like, okay, cool. Mandalorian Season 2. I'll check it out when it hits the web. It didn't really do much to get me excited.
Yeah, that's what's interesting about some of these Disney properties, that they're just so popular in and of themselves that they can put out a trailer that basically all it does is make you go, oh, it's coming.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
right.
Like every shot in this, but save for a couple of them, you know, you do get the Baby Yoda gag.
Right, right.
But beyond the Baby Yoda gag, most of it functions basically as motion stills. It's the same. You could get a picture in Entertainment Weekly being like, here, they're on a boat. Here, they're at a gladiator ring. But it's not really showing you amazing shots. It's just kind of teasing things with voiceover in these images. But you can do that with The Mandalorian, and people are going to tune in. And it's kind of nice when that can happen because they know they don't need to oversell it. Therefore, they don't have to give away plot points. They don't have to do that. So it can work. So that's... I mean, I'd agree with you that it's not like a mind-blowing trailer that's like, I was here, but now I'm here because of... No, I mean, it was like, I was already excited for it. I was going to watch it, and now I'm still excited for it and still going to watch it. But, I mean, certain things don't need to blow your mind. And this one certainly wasn't a mind-blowing type of trailer. Someone throws this one in there. Toys for Fun one. Guys, do you think Pedro Pascal quitting rumors are true? No.
What? I mean, where did those rumors even originate? Yeah. I saw this circulating around. I was like, this is nonsense. This is absolute...
Yeah, I mean that. I mean, there's pictures of him like working on season two with Jon Favreau and the score, and he's got the helmet on and conducting. And like, the, I mean, the idea that he's not having like, what, I don't
really
even know.
He hates it.
Yeah, he hates it. It was, seems very unlikely. He has a fan favorite blockbuster property. I mean, it's not a movie, but television fandom, yeah, blockbuster type thing. And it, like, it's the most popular Star Wars thing right now. Why would he ruin that? So I don't, some of these rumors are just really bizarre. And there's a group of people that like to like sit and speculate about all the behind the scenes drama. I, however, am not interested in doing that.
I have no idea where that even came from, right, why people would even believe it. Like, he's in the second season of literally the most successful thing that Disney is producing right now. Like, mm-hmm, why would he just say, oh, no, I'm going to hang it up, man. I'm hating this. I mean, like you said, we just saw that video the other day of him like conducting the orchestra,
yeah,
for Ludwig Göransson. Like, what? Where are you getting? Oh, it just, I don't know. Don't believe everything you see online, folks. Seriously. Like, there are some ridiculous assumptions just being thrown out there.
Yeah. And, you know, when everyone's just sitting at home and can't do anything, and we don't have a lot of actual news. Like, that's something, right, like, one of the reasons that we skip weeks before the podcast is because there's just not stuff happening. Or like, and I don't want to turn this into the Sean Chandler Talks About Movie Delays podcast.
Right.
So some weeks that's all the news is that, and we've already done that, and I'm done doing that. So it's just tough. And so when people are just sitting there without real things to talk about, they just stir things up. Let's move along to a kind of our main little editorial section on this one and discuss what will happen to the world of movies in light of the year 2020 and everything that's gone down. Shashank sent in a super chat and asked, guys, do you believe in the post-pandemic era people will be more judicious about their film choices, being more selective? And he asked it a couple of different ways, a couple of different comments. One of them being a little bit about people going to the movie theater. And I think in general, the discussion is, will they be theater or will studios be a little bit more selective on what movies they green light?
Right.
And I suspect I think the whole game is that you have such a big disruption that's unprecedented that our watching behavior over the last 6 months has changed. Mm-hmm. And the fact that theaters are open, but people aren't going back, I think that says quite a bit. And then studios, a bunch of these studios kind of shot themselves in the foot by putting, you know, all of their eggs in one basket. It's, you know, Disney has all of these movies that they needed to make $1 billion. And now they can't put any of them out, or if they do, they'll lose money. So I think everything is going to change because of that. That's my quick theory. Griffin, how about you?
I agree. I think definitely, I mean, certainly with Tenet, things are showing that we can't release films that we used to. It's interesting. I saw a tweet yesterday. I think it was from Scott Mendelson of Forbes. He was saying that Tenet is making the same amount of money that an original blockbuster would make had it not been directed by Christopher Nolan. So this is like a taste of normalcy for Nolan a little bit there, which is interesting. But I agree with you. I think they'll definitely be more careful about what they green light, which is both good and actually, no, I don't know.
I think with what the industry's been doing the last few years, I think it's only good.
Yeah, right. I guess that is true. And then some of the other stuff will be relegated to TV.
To elaborate on that, because like Disney leans so heavily into what's the safest bet, everyone's going for a sequel, an adaptation, and they're all like, who can get the biggest franchise? And okay, we're going to do Justice League, give it $300 million. And they're just inflating the budget of these blockbusters to try and outdo the other ones. And then we're losing mid-budget.
Mm-hmm.
There's not as many of those. And that's what we talked about earlier in this year about, you know, things like Extraction finding a home on Netflix. And I think this will make a lot more studios go, wait a minute, if we had a bunch of movies that we paid, we made for $50 million, we'd have a lot more options right now. But we don't have options with all these $250 million blockbusters. Sorry, I cut you off.
Oh, no, no, no. You're totally fine. I agree with you. I think, interestingly enough, I think this will be the rise of the mid-budget movie. I think that film will sort of come back in a way that we haven't seen for some time. I mean, it's basically been really small independent films and then the massive colossal superhero blockbusters. And I think now, because studios are kind of weighing, you know, how much money they want to put into a movie because how much are they going to get back? We're going to get more films like Extraction, more films like, gosh, I don't know. I'm just blanking on literally everything, but more of that mid-budget, like a movie that has kind of disappeared, more like John Wick type stuff. No. So that's what I like.
Watching through these Liam Neeson thrillers.
Yeah, that's big. That'll be big.
And so, but they used to just be called thrillers. They used to just be called action thrillers, but now they're Liam Neeson action thrillers because it's a genre that only he could sell tickets for, like him and a little bit of Jason Statham. And then, you know, John Wick comes around. But like, it's that whole myth, like these movies that are not based off a big franchise. They're not blockbusters. They're right there in the middle. They're
right,
not indie.
Right.
They're right there in the middle. And they're just not making them like they did back in the 80s and the 90s. And I suspect we'll have a return to some of that. And even think kind of like those mid-tier dramas and stuff like that, that used to could potentially be big hits. Like they put out back in the 90s, The Firm, A Few Good Men. These become big, gigantic hits, even though they're not like movies filled with special effects action. They're just courtroom dramas and stuff like that. And so then we stopped making them because they never turned into big hits. And so I imagine that Hollywood's thinking, okay, what can we do with some of this stuff? Or even to our discussion earlier in this, some people are probably realizing, wait, these movies, we weren't making them at all, but stuff like that can do great on Netflix.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, The Devil All the Time, this bleak, dark film that couldn't have been, you know, this is not a $200 million film, but all these people are talking about it because it does have star power, and star power does get someone to click on Netflix. And it's just a very different dynamic of like star power does not get people to leave their house, drive to a movie theater and pay $50 for date night. Mm-hmm. But if you're just sitting at home like, well, look, Tom Holland's in a movie. Oh, and that delightful Pennywise. Oh, look.
Yes, delightful Pennywise. Yeah.
But I mean, Bird Box being like that doesn't feel like a movie that would have been a massive blockbuster in the theaters. It just didn't feel that way at all. No one was talking about the trailer. And then they dropped a Sandra Bullock movie at the right time on Netflix, and everyone was talking about it. Bird Box. I still haven't seen it.
It's pretty. Well, I don't. No, wait. I did see it. It was awful. That's right. I remember watching it.
I heard. It's not even like I didn't hear people saying, "Oh, there's this awesome Sandra Bullock movie." All I heard was, "What is it? Bird Box, where Sandra Bullock's blindfolded?" Like that's all people said about it. And for whatever reason, that got people to click on it.
And yeah,
that's going to change the industry, I think.
Yeah, it was just one of those things that was like that movie hit in a really weird way, and people were like really stoked on it. And I guess it was just because of the concept and also like Sandra Bullock, but also like, I don't know, it was like a horror thriller movie and people were like, oh, we want to watch one of those. Yeah. It was like right after Christmas or around Christmas or something like that. Like a really bizarre time for that film to come out.
And
everyone loved it. Yeah, I think that's the thing, though. It's what do you call it? Streaming. Like the whole industry has sort of been making this gradual shift to streaming, paid VOD stuff like that. And I think now because this whole thing is going on, it's just sort of like forced their hand a little bit more. So if you want to get your thing made for like a sizable budget or whatever, and it's not a comic book property, you might have to end up going to a Netflix or like an HBO Max or something like that, where, you know, they can shell out the money because it's going to television and streaming or something, and people are going to watch it. So I think the big thing we're going to see is these new streaming services that have popped up, like Peacock, HBO Max, Disney Plus, and stuff like that. They're going to just start doubling down on original content for those platforms, and just making really interesting choices, which I we've seen a lot of from HBO Max. I've not really seen so much of it from the others, but.
You didn't check out A Brave New World on Peacock?
Yeah, as much as...
I downloaded Peacock and looked at it for all of about 2 minutes, and I was like, oh, okay, I don't think there's anything here for me, and never went back to it. And I actually need to... I watched almost all of The Fugitive on Quibi, and there's two episodes left, and then I didn't finish it, and then my trial ran up, so I'm actually going to end up paying for Quibi to watch. Ooh. 15 minutes of The Fugitive.
Was it worth it?
Of course not. I mean,
what are you doing?
I am very committed to supporting Jack Bauer and his endeavors, as well as Boyd Holbrook, who was in Run All Night, going back to these Liam Neeson thrillers that I keep talking about. So I'm very supportive of them, and I need to see if he's going to get off the hook. Rob Johnson with a super chat. Thank you so much for that. Chiming in on this one, future theaters, given that physical infrastructure isn't going anywhere anytime soon, I think the question is, will people's entertainment habits change so much that they don't go back? Real quick, before we dive into what he's saying here, he has his own movie channel. Go ahead and check that out. He kind of does these deep discussions of movies, sometimes checking movies out for the very first time. Does it hold up stuff? You can check that out right there. But so he to the question here, I do think, I mean, thank you. See people's behaviors changing already. I went to see the new releases, but I haven't gone to go see any old movies. And I think it's tough to really know so much of where exactly all of this is going. But one of the reasons I don't go out and do anything, even though a lot of things are open in Texas, is because I don't want to just jump through all the hoops. It's not even a fear or anything like that, or like that things are bad where I'm at. I don't want to have to jump through the hoops. And there's all these new companies, and I don't know what hoops are going to be at whatever place I go, or whether they're going to have to be sit outside. So like my wife and I, our grandparents took the kids a couple weeks back. So it was maybe the first time ever that we had no kids, that all three kids went to the grandparents, because the baby's just now old enough that we could do that. And we just stayed at home, which that's all you can kind of do right now. There's maybe right. We could have done something, but it was like we would have to do a research project to figure out what to do. I think you have people, if you were already at 6 months, it's not going away in the next 3 months. You have a full year where people just adjust to not by default going out to the movies. That will change people's behavior. Absolutely. That will change habits.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's, I think it's like, you'll either have people who are just like uncertain and they don't want to risk it for their own personal health or the health of those around them. And then you'll have people who, like you, who is just like, well, it's just too much of a hassle. And it's like, there's not like, it's not worth it to go see Jurassic Park in theaters for like the fifth time. Like, so I think it'll be a really interesting, like the theatrical experience will be very interesting going forward. And I think, unfortunately, we're going to get to a place where the only movies playing in theaters are going to be the big tentpole films, you know, like the big, like the indie film. There'll still be like independent theaters around and stuff like that that play the smaller movies for sure. But the emphasis will be on, you know, DC films, Marvel films, franchise movies. Like, I don't even know, like maybe like Christopher Nolan, stuff like that. But with Tenet's performance being as poor as it is, I think they're going to have to reevaluate how they release even Christopher Nolan's films. I don't know. It'll be interesting, but yeah.
Okay, we got a breaking piece of news.
Oh yeah, I saw this. Yeah.
So, Jim Evier. I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name. I did. Breaking news: John Cena will play Peacemaker in his own HBO comedy show. And so thank you for bringing that to my attention. Let me do a quick little screen deal here. Okay, what does this one say in here? Working alongside James Gunn on Suicide Squad was an absolute masterclass in how it's the best thing beloved friends characters in life in a new and fun way. I cannot wait for the DC Universe to experience more of the absurdity of this Peacemaker in his own project on HBO Max. So there you I lost you. There you go. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cover you up. So apparently we just announced they're doing an actual spinoff with John Cena of his character from The Suicide Squad on HBO Max. I can't say that I've read a Peacemaker comic book, and we don't have an actual trailer for this movie. So we are very early on in it's tough to even process it because we haven't seen him. We haven't seen any actual footage of this. We've seen a behind the scenes trailer to be like, that looks like that'll be wacky and fun. But what we haven't seen is the what it looks like. But just think of what this actually means, though. We haven't seen anything. They have. And they went, that is TV show material right there.
Yeah. I mean, all you have to do is just look at his ridiculous costume and that behind the scenes footage thing. Like he's going to steal so much of that film. I think he's not going to be a main character for sure. I mean, like, I think the main people would be like Idris Elba, Harley Quinn, you know, so on and so forth. But I think he's going to be that one scene stealing character that people are like, oh yeah, I want to see more of him. And I guess the other thing is does this mean that he makes it out alive? If they're green lighting a show, is he one of the few that makes it out of the Suicide Squad alive? I don't know. I mean, maybe they set the show prior to this mission and he actually does die in it. But I don't know. Just seeing John Cena in this ridiculous getup, just doing something so campy and like, obviously, I'm going to assume it's going to be edgy and R-rated in this miniseries. Like, this has... I don't know. This has the potential to be really, really good. And again, I don't know anything about Peacemaker, but I know that I like seeing John Cena in that costume with James Gunn behind the camera. So I'm all in.
So I'm fascinated. We had another super chat from the same guy. We had a couple of those. We'll catch up on them and then talk a little bit of Enola Holmes. Tom asks, which multiverse movie in 2022 will be better? Debating what will be better when we haven't seen anything and we're just going, will it be The Flash or will it be Doctor Strange? We're 2 years out. And so I don't like to speculate what would be better on things that are just so far out. And all both of them kind of have this element of like, hey, we're going to go weird and wacky. Look at all this stuff we're going to do. And that can go really good or that can go really bad. Yeah. So I don't really have a guess.
Yeah, it was a question. It was just like what do we think is going to be better or what?
What's going to be the better is the word that it was used. Which one are you more excited for? I guess you can answer either.
I don't know, man. Prior to this WandaVision trailer, I probably would have said The Flash just because of, you know, what it's sort of setting up and whatnot. But now with this WandaVision trailer, and I'm thinking of like, you know, what they can do with Mephisto and how it's going to tie into Doctor Strange and whatnot. And then also the rumor that they're thinking of maybe getting like alternate versions of like Tony Stark and like Tom Cruise is Tony Stark and like John Krasinski is Captain America. Like, that's kind of incredible. My only concern when it comes to Doctor Strange is that I want it to keep the horror elements. And I think I can start to sort of piece together why Scott Derrickson left if those rumors of incorporating like alternate versions of these characters are true. It just feels like too much. And that's my biggest concern with both of these films. But I think if I had to go with one right now, it would be just Doctor Strange because we're getting to see Sam Raimi back in the director's chair. And I want to see what he can bring to the table with this like weird, hellish, you know, Dante's Inferno kind of thing. At least that's what I'm assuming it's going to be. But I don't know. That could change. Like, they dropped the trailer for The Flash and I'm like, oh, wow. All right. Maybe that is the way to go. I just, you know.
Right. And it's kind of one of those ones of, you know, especially both of them. There's so many of these big rumor mill type things going on, plus big announcements happening related to them, that it kind of is this back and forth thing that I need to see a trailer to really have an opinion. I guess we have more confirmation on this one, but Daniel Skinner with the Super Chat, thanks so much, says Tom Cruise is going to space in 2021, and several other people in here were asking, what do we think about Tom Cruise making a movie in space? We've already talked about this like seven times because it's been announced, rumored, discussed for the last 3 months or something like that. So we've touched on this. I had a guy message me passionately a couple months back, like, do you think because Tom Cruise is going to shoot a movie in space, it could be bigger than Avatar? It was like, I honestly don't think that shooting in space will have hardly any effect on its box office, because we've reached the era where special effects are so good that there's not, I don't know that I will be able to tell the difference between whether he was in space or whether he was somewhere else. Because those effects are just very convincing these days. And if anything, we're used to seeing fake space. And right, so real space could be very anticlimactic, or it just doesn't look as, it doesn't look real, even though it is real. There's weird things like that happen, that we spend so much time watching fake space that real space might not be convincing.
Yeah. That's a good point that I didn't even consider. Because like, I feel like the most like the closest we've got to realism in space felt like Gravity. Right. But there was even like a sort of veil of like fiction. There was just like, okay, we're watching, like, this is very realistic, but it's also like, I also kind of know it's not real.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah. That'll be interesting to see how that works. I think it'll feel more like a documentary probably, than anything. Right. Like it'll be kind of weird.
Right. I mean, that's kind of, what does it even like, what does it mean? And, but it's also the sort of thing that like, what drives a movie to make Avatar money and Endgame money? It's not that Tom Cruise went to space.
Yeah.
It's just not that. It's either you build a wave of momentum for 10 years or you have whatever freak thing happened in 2009 where everybody had to go see Avatar. And to this day, nobody really knows. There's not like a single reigning theory. It's just like a very strange James Cameron effect of being able to hop right on the wave of culture.
Yeah.
So whatever that is. Shashank, another guy, he actually has a movie channel where he reviews older kind of classic movies, says, guys, what is the movie that both of you have rewatched the most during the COVID time period? Whatever it would be something my kids watch. So I've seen Frozen 2, Wreck-It Ralph 2, Frozen a ton of times this year.
I'm going to check my letterbox because I don't actually know.
For me, it would be like Bloodsport. But that's not like
Bloodsport.
I mean, it, like, of all movies, it's Bloodsport. But that's because it's like I'm going to bed. I'm going to put something on that I can fall asleep to in 5 minutes.
Yeah,
but then I mean, anytime you put Bloodsport on, you have to watch it all the way to the end. So, but I mean, it's not an interesting thing. It's literally like, what did I put on while I was going to bed? Because I'm not able to rewatch a ton of movies because I'm like, I have a list of 100 movies I need to watch just for rankings I'm working on in the future. And whenever I'm like, I'm watching all these Liam Neeson thrillers, guess what ranking is coming next month? I mean, it's kind of the way I do things. And so I don't have like, oh yeah, watched Endgame 4 times this year. Like, I don't do that. I just
can't. I haven't either. I'm just looking through right now and I haven't rewatched anything. I usually pivot from like franchise to franchise. Like, I'll watch all the films in this sort of like franchise, then I'll move on to the next one, watch all the films in that one. I've been watching a lot of Spielberg. Honest to God, the thing I've watched the most during quarantine is just like SpongeBob when I put it on before going to bed. Like, just to throw some mindless whatever on and like watch an episode, laugh, and then I'll pass out. So
I watch Van Damme jump up in the air, do the splits and kick a guy in the face, land in the splits, uppercut the guy in the balls. You watch SpongeBob.
I do. I think there's something wrong with me, but that's okay.
I think there's something wrong with both of us in life. Things that we think. And then super chat from Shashank, and then we'll talk about Enola Holmes for just a little bit. We're winding down our main topic, so if you want to start throwing questions in on the chat, we'll kind of tackle those shortly. Shashank says, Tom Cruise is going to space. There's a lot of people that wanted to talk about that. Sky is certainly not the limit for him. Why do you believe, or what do you believe is the reason behind the guy's longevity in the age of Marvel and DC? Well, I mean, I think the obvious thing to say in regards to even the way he phrased that was he was well established before the age of Marvel and DC, because the era of Marvel and DC started about 10 years ago. The comic book era started about 20 years ago, but it was kind of spotty, and they have these consistent franchises consistently putting out releases that are just dominating about that 2008 with the MCU combined with the Nolan trilogy, and then DCU kicked off. And so Tom Cruise was a massive movie star before that. And I think he drinks the blood of virgins. And so he doesn't really, age. Or maybe Interview with a Vampire was more autobiographical than we realized. He's very well established, but he's unusually youthful. Like he can pass for a guy much younger. So then he didn't age out of being in blockbusters, and he also didn't stop doing some of that stuff. In fact, like in his 20s, he wasn't the action guy. He did Top Gun, but I mean, he was doing Cocktail and Born on the 4th of July.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until like he's settled in as an older gentleman doing these action movies. But he's a very good movie star that he's committed to entertaining the audience. And, you know, he's like apparently got really mad when his cameo in Tropic Thunder got spoiled because he was so excited for people to go see the movie. And then out of the blue, he steps out and does this cameo that's so funny and so different from anything he's ever done before. Yeah. And he's thinking like, how do I entertain people? And he does red carpets, and he shakes everybody's hand, and he takes a picture with everybody, and he'll be out there for hours. And there's guys that just, they love being the movie star, and they know how to play the game, and they do the game really well. Besides a brief window where he was really into Katie Holmes and let the Scientology come out a little bit too much and was arguing with Matt Lauer on science. Besides that, he's had 40 years of being a movie star.
Yeah, it's really impressive. I mean, he is right. I think he just kind of, after the whole Scientology thing, he's like, how do I rehabilitate my image? It's like, okay, I'm going to be the authentic stunts guy. All right, I'll do that now. Because it's just, I don't know, it is an interesting thing that he sort of has found in the later years, in his later years. It's like, how do I channel my energy in a way that's good for my public image? That's sort of what's going on there. But I don't know if you saw, Sean, but... a bunch of movies got delayed.
Yeah, I was hoping you would keep talking because I was doing looking up to see the delays, which ones are legit.
Yeah, Black Widow.
Literally, before we started, I would say to someone, I don't want this to be the Sean Chandler Talks About Movie Delays show. And then now it turns out we're like live catching the delays. So where are you seeing this?
It was on like Variety and stuff like that.
Variety's okay.
Basically Black Widow got pushed to May 7th of 2021. West Side Story got pushed back a whole year, and Eternals is now coming out in November of 2021. November 5th to be exact.
Trying to pull up Twitter, and then on this browser where I can pull it up and show you guys the screen, it is not working. But thank you, CM Waters, for bringing that up to our attention. But
and Shang-Chi has been delayed and will now release on July 9th, 2021.
Okay. You said, did that make the Eternals after Shang-Chi, so the release of the movies is different?
No, So the Eternals is coming out after Shang-Chi now.
Huh.
Yeah. Which I assumed both of those films wouldn't really have you know, much to do with each other, but this just sort of like confirms it. So not really surprised. Again, I still think not putting Black Widow on Disney Plus is a massive mistake. But you know, they're gonna do whatever they're gonna do.
Okay. So. Here's the article. Okay. Now I found it just in time for us to have already discussed all of this, but that's fascinating that the order's changing. But at the same time, like you mentioned, that why would those two movies interact with one another? So even though I didn't want this to be the Sean Chandler Talks About Movie Delays, I even joked about that like 20 minutes ago. 20 minutes ago, I was joking about I don't want this to be the Sean Chandler Talks About Movie Delays.
At least we will not have to talk about Black Widow getting delayed for the rest of the year. So it's like the will they, won't they, you know, we can stop playing that game, which is good. Although they pushed the death of the Nile back to December of this year, which I don't know. I guess they're just going to be content releasing it then. Not like anything's going to be better in December, guys, but whatever. And I guess with Soul, they're still planning on doing what they were, like, either a theatrical release and like the Disney Plus thing. And I think the reason why they're keeping that is because they think that they have a really good shot at a Best Picture nomination with that film. So I think that's what's going on there. So it's literally No Time to Die is the only freaking movie coming out for the rest of the year that, until December. God, please don't move. Just keep that release date, please. Don't move. Don't do it. If they push to next year,
if it stays,
dude, if they push to next year, I don't know how I'll be able to actually handle. It has been 5 years since the last Craig film, and we were this close.
We were
literally weeks away.
But yeah, that's where I wasn't going to talk about Wonder Woman getting delayed, because this is just what happens. I don't trust any of these release dates anymore. It's just the norm. Like, hey, what? Like, even right now, it's like, oh man, what do I think about this? I don't think anything about it. I don't have any opinion on the fact that all these movies have been delayed, because it's just the way it is. And I said this back in July when we had the second round of big delays, when things started to fire back up and we were really close to 10, and it was like, oh, it's getting pushed back a little bit. And I said, they should just take everything off. If they're not okay dropping it on streaming, take it off the release, because there's no point at this point in time, because it's just too uncertain. And then we got that glimmer of hope because stuff actually did come out, and it just did not make the money it needed to make. I mean, just, you know, I don't know what it should have made, wanted to make, but you know, Tenet.
I think people were expecting too much. I think that movie made about as much as it, plus it's still in theaters. Like, it's still making money, and it's not like taking massive dips week to week. So
yeah, but when your starting number's that small, I mean, you know, it's would a Nolan movie's after 3 weeks or so is at like 40 million. That's normally would have made day one. That's what you would have thought for day one. And obviously, weird year. Everyone knew the numbers would be lower.
Yeah.
But there was that, and something had to test the waters. Something had to test it and fail. Or prove, hey, everyone's ready to go back, which didn't seem terribly likely, but something had to test the waters. And I think Tenet gave them a very good, this is even some of the things we talked about before, that you have to put something out just to have information. You have to have raw data to make guesses as to what you should do. So what did we learn? People aren't going back to the theaters. They're not there yet.
Yeah.
And therefore you can't put out these movies that need to make $1 billion. And thus we get today's announcement that it doesn't change anything for me. I don't have anything new to say. I'm just saying the same stuff we've been saying for a while.
Yeah.
That 2020 is canceled. Whew. Got to do another brainstorming session to figure out how to keep having
Yeah,
for the next 6 months.
It's just annoying. Thank God for Netflix. Honest to God, like, they are the only entity that is keeping the entire entertainment industry alive right now.
Yep. And they're getting people to watch depressing movies about people committing suicide.
Listen, if it gets people to watch more indie films, with Tom Holland, you see him in things other than Spider-Man, then so be it. But
yeah, so I'm sure we've all been getting, movie channels have been getting these comments of being like, oh, looks like you're stretching the bottom of the barrel for these ideas. It's like, oh, first off, if I do something different, that's not really like, or so like you're all out of ideas, right? Now that you're doing this, like, well, I did something new and different. That's the opposite of running out of ideas. But hey, yeah, it's a tough time. Why are you being a dick about it? Like, why do people post this stuff? But like, none of this is surprising for me, but as someone that reviews movies for a living, specifically these types of movies that are all getting delayed and not being put on streaming, it makes for a tough, very tough situation for me. Anyway, but it's part of the
frustrating.
It's part of it. It is what it is.
Yeah.
What were we talking about? I lost my place.
I don't even know, man. We're just talking about that. Honestly, this did tie into the conversation, which is like, what is the future of the industry? And well, the future of the industry is we're not going to get major new releases until next year, except maybe No Time to Die. So we'll see.
Super chat. Love and Monsters, the new apocalypse movie starring Dylan O'Brien and Michael Rooker, will release next month at home. Looks good for October. And it's kind of the thing. Things like that are probably getting a better chance because of all of this. I think that's a good thing, that movies that might have been overshadowed or missed in everything kind of going on, those are the thing. You know, Extraction, it's the number one Netflix original of all time. Why? Well, because they made an action movie that was pretty accessible with obviously a major movie star, and it dropped with a clean slate. There's still demand for new movies, and they had the supply. Theaters don't.
That's true.
Well,
and the other thing is like films are still being made. Like there's that Sam Levinson film with John David Washington and Zendaya that they shot like during quarantine that's supposed to come out later this year. So it's like people were worried about like, okay, Netflix has all this like content backlogged, right? So when they eventually run out, what are we going to have? Things are still like moving into production. Like, so I under strict guidelines and whatnot, but like we will still get content into next year and whatnot. So I'm not too concerned about us, just running out of content. I think there will be stuff there.
All right, let's close out for the main section. We'll be on here for a little bit longer answering your questions. But on the main section, talking real quick on Enola Holmes or whatever else you might recommend that they watch. Did you happen to watch Enola Holmes?
I didn't. I didn't get a screener and I didn't get around to actually watching the film
yet. So then if you can let me know what you will recommend to them. I checked out Enola Holmes last week and I had a real good time with it. I thought it was a lot of fun. And the cast is lively. It's almost got like a Guy Ritchie vibe to the way it's directed. If you don't know the premise of it, basically Sherlock Holmes's much younger sister kind of goes off on her first adventure. And she's played by Eleven, Millie Bobby Brown, and then Henry Cavill as Sherlock Holmes. So it's just like Sam Claflin is Mycroft Holmes. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a real, words that people are using, like delightful and charming. That's what I'm seeing people saying about it. That's a good way to phrase it. There's a few things that frustrated me just a little bit. Maybe a few too much. It had enough plot for like an 8-episode run of a miniseries. And you could see it's based off of books, how that could be the case for why that happened. It can get a little bit preachy. It's a movie that doesn't necessarily need to be. It has a female empowerment through the story, nice and strong, but it pauses to like preach at you a little bit. Anytime the movies do that, I don't enjoy that. It's one of the reasons I don't watch Christian movies really at all. But I thoroughly enjoyed the movie. I have a full review of it. So some people are asking me some more specific questions, like, well, was Henry Cavill good in it? You can check out my full review that I talk about all that stuff. But I mean, of course, he's really good in it. But it's a nice little surprise. And it's a great example of when you make a movie that's not a blockbuster, the year 2020 happens, you can sell it to Netflix and it can find a home where people will watch it and check it out. And I imagine a lot of people are going to check it out over this next week because you got Henry Cavill and you've got that girl from Stranger Things and it's Sherlock Holmes. So it, without needing to be a big, flashy, like expensive movie, people will click on it. So I imagine this will be the hit movie of the weekend. So
yeah, and that paired with like the positive reviews. Yeah. I think it'll definitely,
I haven't heard anyone give a negative review. I haven't heard a negative experience.
I haven't either. I've only heard like exactly what you're saying. Like it's really charming and it's got a lot of energy and it's fun.
In fact, I think I'm the most negative I've heard anyone about it. And I gave it a very positive review. So that's a good sign when I'm the most negative person. What would you recommend people check out this weekend?
Oh man, what the heck have I been watching? I watched, you know what I watched that I hadn't seen in a while that I think is one of Tim Burton's underrated films is Frank and Weenie. I think Frank and Weenie is a really underrated movie.
The one from like 8 years ago or his short film from the 80s?
the one from like 8 years ago. Yeah, it's like I really liked that. It's surprisingly topical, but it's like cute. It's like his like spin on a classic horror tale, but with like pets and stuff like that. So I don't know. I had fun with it, and I think it's like a nice family adventure. Not adventure, but just like a nice little family film. Yeah, I don't know. I've been meaning to rewatch it, and I've been going down like a bit of a Burton hole just because of the season and whatnot. So, yeah, so that's why I kind of wound up on Frank and Weenie, and it was surprisingly good. I liked it more than I thought I did. So, yeah, go watch that on Disney Plus.
All righty. So where can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, you can head on over to the FilmSpeak channel and check out all the stuff we have going on over there. I'll probably have reviews up for the Trial of the Chicago 7 later this week, along with a couple of other things. Then also Film Forum tomorrow, our news show. So feel free to head on over there and check that out. You can also follow me on Twitter at Griff Schiller.
All right. Thank you so much for tuning in for the audio version of the show. Be sure to leave that rating and review. And if you're here on the live stream, we will keep talking for a little bit. And everybody, thank you so much for talking movies with us today.